This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.
Violence, acts of war, and terrorism are all on the rise.
I had a dream. It was the end of the world.
Invasion.
I think it's something more. Something darker.
People we don't know to risk their lives.
Strong man is strong as alone. You ever heard that?
That's not a saying. That's the opposite of what the saying is.
Divided, we are not enough.
The world needs Superman.
Why I brought you together.
Ride ain't over yet.
My man.
Signal, that's your... That's your signal. That means we have to go now.
Yeah, that's what that means.
It's so cool.
The Punisher, a firearm-wielding vigilante, was pulled from New York Comic Con by Marvel and Netflix, something Steve Harsh, who's been attending for years, understands.
I do kind of agree with that. Out of respect for the victims and for the situation.
But another attendee, Leo Lawrence, says the Punisher didn't cause the Vegas shooting.
That's only punishing the fans, and it's only letting the idiot that did it win.
Punisher or not, security here is tight, with the NYPD's heavily armed anti-terrorism unit standing guard. At the Jacob Javits Convention Center in Manhattan, I'm Julie Walker.
Hey guys, you're listening to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today we're joined by a special music guest. We're joined by Ernie of the band The Complex Dialect. Ernie, how's it going?
It goes quite well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I'm super excited to talk to you a little bit about just what you guys have been working on. First off, I just want to say that I think the music that you guys make is amazing. It's definitely like nothing I've ever heard before, and I had a chance to listen to your newest LP. I got a little bit of a listen of it, and it's like all the songs are different. Like no song is like the same genre, and I think that is so unique.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I know I'm talking like a mile a minute. I'm so excited. I wanted to ask for our listening audience, for those that are uninitiated to your sound, tell us just a little bit about how you guys came together to form this amazing group.
No problem. The Complex Dialect came together around 2016. it was a combination of a lot of different scenarios, actually. The first one being, I personally had been playing music in Seattle for about 4 to 5 years now, and through the course of that period, I had just come across so many amazing, beautiful musicians. And during that time, when I was first starting to play music, I spent a lot of time really just jamming and just getting to know, like, the Seattle music scene. And around the beginning of 2016, after I had, you know, played for a few other artists, I decided I wanted to make my own group. And I was lucky enough to invite a lot of the beautiful musicians in the band to my birthday jam in January, just as kind of an experiment to see who played well with each other. We didn't play covers or anything. We just made up a bunch of music throughout the entire night. And then post that jam, I had just found the right people that I felt communicated well, not just with me, but with each other. And from the beginning of 2016 on, we spent that whole year not really focusing on what music's really going to do for us, but more like, as I'm sure you know, 2016 was a pretty turbulent year.
Absolutely.
there's a lot going on. And within our band, there was a lot going on both externally with how we were dealing with the election and, you know, innocent people being murdered by people that were paid to protect them, all these things on top of the internal issues that we were facing in our own personal lives. So we took that time in 2016 as a band to really not focus on, like, how to be a traditional band or how to play shows or we got to record. We were just really in a lot of pain, and we were really frustrated, and we used that time with each other to just make an album that really reflected two sides, both the problem side, which is calling out a lot of the issues that we were seeing, and also the solution side of how we were choosing to deal and cope with it and move forward. And that's really how the band came together. It was through, we found a lot of healing and processing through each other and through just creating music and not really defining a genre for each thing that we had going on. So that was pretty much the basic origin of us. We were just a group of kids who felt like it was time to just really say what we really felt and what we were really seeing in the world. We really wanted to say things that we didn't feel were being said by other people on a large basis. So.
Absolutely. I love it. You guys have this very eclectic sound, and I know it sounds cliche.
No, I get it.
tell me about the significance of the band's name, the Complex Dialect. When I hear it evokes, you know, these feelings or thoughts of, you know, a language that is complex yet beautiful. Is that how you would describe your sound?
Absolutely. For us, music is language, and a lot of our writing style really comes to just speaking to each other musically and also through conversation about exactly what it is we're, like, writing about. But we found that we're way more comfortable when it comes to writing music with just letting it all out and just having those musical conversations right on the spot, as opposed to getting super meticulous right away with, like, editing details and stuff like that. Because before you can really, like, in our opinion, I think before you can really, like, make a powerful speech, you really kind of have to freeform it and let the natural ideas come out. Like, and that's kind of, like, the main genesis of, like, the name. It really comes down to us really searching for more effective ways to speak to each other through music. It's a very, very, that's also one of the reasons you mentioned the eclecticness of the group. That's one of the reasons why we are so genre bending, is because we didn't want to be limited to being one specific style of conversation. We wanted it to be as intricate and as free and as, you know, out there as we possibly can, just because we don't really do limitation. And I think part of that comes to how we communicate with each other. So yeah, that's the origin behind the name.
right on. I love it. Tell me a little bit about your newest single. I know that the Huffington Post has picked it up, and it's
streamable
on their website. That's got to be a huge feeling for you. Tell me a little bit about the single and kind of what went into it.
So that single, when we started in the middle, I would say towards like the three quarters into the year of 2016, when we were really starting to finalize the album and we really had a strong concept of what we were going for, we noticed that we kind of needed a turning point. And also to keep it even, we try to split as much of the time as that first album as we can between the fingers. I think Lola has one extra song, but that's because when we started, she had material ready to go right off the bat. So we were still kind of playing catch up to Lola. And then Adam, the lead singer of the Song One compilation, it was one of the, there were two songs in the album that wasn't exclusively like really structured, as a band that were brought from external spots. One of them being, a song that will come out later. The other one being One Constellation from Adam. He brought that song and was like, I have this idea. This is something, I've been working on. And it just really fit naturally into what we were trying to say with the album. And it's like I said, it's the turning point. It's with an album that really speaks on the first half of a lot of the issues that we're facing. We needed to have a point that just kind of says, now what do you do with it? And so for us, that song really represents perspective. It's really about pulling yourself out of this small thing that we call Earth and understanding what is all of our issues that we're facing mean in the grand scheme of the world, or of the universe, really. It's a song that plays with the idea that if you take yourself out of the equation and look, what does it all mean in the grand scheme of things, you might find some healing, you might find some answers, you might not, who knows, but I think it's really just kind of drawing attention to that perspective to really set the palette for the second half of the album, which is really about healing and moving forward and finding connection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. Tell me, I guess for somebody that's listening to your music for the very first time, what is it, what's the message that you want to convey to your listening audience?
You're not crazy. that's kind of the biggest one, because I know like through 2016 and now even more through 2017, it's hard to, you know, sometimes wake up and not feel like, is this real life? Is this reality? Is this just me? And is this like it's really easy to isolate yourself and really feel segregated based off of like feeling like the world is isolating you alone. Regardless of who you are or what your background is, I feel like in some way, form, or fashion, everyone on this planet isn't satisfied with something that's going on right now. And that can be really maddening. So, like, my first message that I really want people to hear is that, you know, you're heard and your perspective is shared. And I think the second thing, it really comes down to finding connection and a common ground with each other. And I feel like that's another underlying theme throughout the album is, like, you have multiple characters that are experiencing, like, the same intensity of struggle in their own individualistic perspectives. And for us, another huge turning point is like in the song, Looking for a Friend for the End of the World, which is, it's kind of like acknowledging that everything's kind of gone awry, but at the same time, we can find that healing and connection with each other through like being able to have those conversations and being able to just talk about how we really feel and acknowledge those feelings before we can move forward. So those would be my two things. You're not alone. It's not just you. It's not in your head. The world really is crazy.
Yes.
And two, there is healing and understanding when you surround yourself with people that are willing to acknowledge the same thing. I mean, that's really what we did. And this album is kind of just like a blueprint of how we've processed and how we continue to like survive in the midst of such craziness.
Absolutely. I wanted to kind of jump ahead and ask you, are there any plans for any type of North American tour, or do you have any upcoming shows?
yes, there's talks of Thor, and I'm not at liberty currently to say.
Oh, sorry.
Show plans. No, don't be sorry. I can't say show plans regarding what we have going on in Seattle just yet, but really, really, really soon. I can say around January, towards the end of January, we're planning a very, very special event that we're just finalizing the details on. When it comes to tour, who knows? I know that we really want to. It's kind of been crazy. I've been doing music for a minute, and this is kind of the first time I've been in a situation where a band that's only played like one show and has just finished one album is kind of picking up all of this attention. So for me, it's less about like just jumping on the road and making sure that we're handling this effectively so that we're properly serving the people that have put in so much support towards our music. I mean, we can't express how grateful we feel to receive all of this love and support in such a short period of time. So before we go on tour, we want to make sure, you know, all of our I's are dotted and all of our T's are crossed, because we really want to serve the music and the people as best as we can. So soon, but not so soon.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to circle back and talk about the album. Looking at the artwork, it's it's definitely it kind of like evokes this emotion of like curiosity, and it's almost what's the word, like enigmatic. It's cryptic. Tell me, what does it mean? It's the butterfly. The pins are going through it. What does it mean?
Well, before I answer, I'm kind of curious. I have a question. And there's no right or wrong answer. Like, that's kind of the reason I made the art the way, or I didn't. The art was actually made by a wonderful artist named Kai Martin, who's someone I had done work with down in San Diego, just to state that. But before I answer that question, quick question. What does it mean to you? When, like, you gave me some visual ideas, but when, what is, like, what's your thoughts on it? I'm just curious.
Okay. Well, when I first look at it, it basically, it sounds cheesy, but I see that it basically, to me, it means like sometimes beauty hurts. It sounds cliche, and I don't mean like on the surface, like if you're a pretty person, it, you know, it hurts to look good or anything like that, but to me, it means that if you have a beautiful spirit or a beautiful soul, or your personality is beautiful, the way that you interact with people, even strangers, sometimes, like, your beauty, it can hurt because people allow fear to come in and to cloud their judgment. They allow fear to essentially push people away, you know, like, when you look at the world's peacemakers, whether it be, you know, John Lennon or Martin Luther King, et cetera, they were beautiful people in the sense that, you know, they just wanted to see everybody get along.
Mm-hmm.
But they were persecuted and ultimately killed. And when I see that, it sounds cheesy, but that's what I see, because, you know, a butterfly is beautiful. It doesn't harm anyone.
Mm.
It goes through this process. It's metamorphosis. It isn't always pretty, but the finished product is beautiful. But to see it, you know, it's almost like, I don't know, when I look at it, it's almost like a crucifix. It's like...
Oh, buddy. You, okay, so first off, let me tell you, you get it.
Oh, okay. No, I thought I was going nuts.
No. This is I wanted to ask you that because of the way that you were describing it, and I wanted to. It's kind of like, so that symbol has kind of been an experiment to me of seeing how well an idea can translate, and it was something that I conversed with Kai when we were coming up with the imagery for the band, and you kind of hit the nail right on the coffin. The imagery is really based off of, you know, metamorphosis, like you said, and change in the midst of oppression. So, like, all of the examples that you just used were really like the highlights in my mind while we were coming up with like a solid symbol. So like the pins represent that concept of like oppressing your beauty. Like, just like you said, it's like you it's hard to realize that you exist as this beautiful creature when you are constantly reminded around you by the world of what they consider your worth is, you know? But I feel like you can't let those outside external perspectives really change who you are. But we really wanted a symbol that represented like oppressed beauty, something that represents, like you said, the concept of the crucifix of the 2017 for like the modern age. And that really made me happy to hear you describe it that way. Like, real, like, it's like, so you kept saying it might sound cheesy. It doesn't sound cheesy, and if it does, I live in cheese. But a lot of the themes in this album is rooted in some deep cheesy goodness, like macaroni style. So
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. What is next for you guys? Because I know that the album, it'll be, it comes out, I think, December 1st. What's correct. Next for you?
Visual representation. I don't want to give away too much of it, but I will say I've always loved cinematography, mm-hmm. and I've always loved presenting stories in multiple media formats. And we're going to try something a little bit different with the concept of music videos and theming, because the album very much is a concept album.
Okay.
We really want to serve that story in a way that even makes it more digestible and at the same time a little bit more enigmatic, you know what I mean? Like giving it a little bit more like clarity with a little bit more mystery mixed into it. So our goal is to really serve this story from many different perspectives, and I think we're really excited to dive in the cinematic perspective of it next.
Okay.
That's one thing we have coming. What I also love about this group is that it's kind of a super group in my mind. If we were to relate like our world to like, for example, I love comic books. For example, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? Mm-hmm. You have like the Avengers, which is like the major group, where it's like everybody assembles to make this super fantastic movie. But individually, each character in the Avengers has their own really true, rich storyline. And I kind of really wanted to model Complex after that, where like Complex to me is like the Avengers. It's the super group of amazing, talented people. But then you have individual projects that are also spurting from our group. So, for example, our rapper Dead Mikes and our other vocalist Adam Signata, they're working on a group called First Hill. They've been developing music. Me and my drummer Oz, we're developing a crazy prog group. Our other guitarist Gibraltar, he has an album that he just recorded off of at London Bridge Studios. So we're kind of trying to really focus on building our own musical universe where it's all interconnected and we all have like, you know, supporting connective ties with each other. And then, you know, in between each of the Complex albums, we want to give space for each of these artists to shine and to give their smaller, like not smaller, I don't want to diminish, but their perspective of what they're going on their own levels. And then we can all bring that again for the next album. So what's really, right now we're in the phase of organizing and really trying to create phases of our musical universe in a very, very palatable way for our listeners to give people something creative to do musically.
Yeah.
We like to challenge ourselves. And I think after 2 years of just kind of like sitting in the shadows and just creating, we're in a position where with all the support and love that we have from people, we really want to give them something fresh and unique. You know, attention is a very large currency in 2017.
Sure.
And it's something that we're definitely not trying to take for granted.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's where we're at with that.
I like it.
Yeah.
You guys recorded at London Bridges Studios, and you worked with Eric, can't think of his name.
Lillebois?
Voice, and then also Ed Brooks.
Yeah.
Both of those guys have done some amazing work with, you know, some very contemporary indie bands, and also some heavy hitters like Pearl Jam. What was it like being at this amazing studio and just working with such legends?
First off, let me say that Ed Brooks has been an absolute godsend. Like, that was a crazy experience. It was that was. I'm sorry, I got a little flustered just thinking about that day of walking into his studio for mastering. And then I love Ed Brooks, but even more for us, Eric has been, he's been like our guiding rock. What was cool about working with Eric is, like, you know, we're, so realistically speaking, we're a broke band who's based out of White Center, which is, like, for any listeners that don't know the Seattle area, White Center is like a little bit south of Seattle. And to come from, you know, being a small town band that practices out of an auto shop to working with someone who's worked with like My Chemical Romance and Saint Hotel and Pearl Jam, like just that level in that world, it felt really interesting. But what makes Eric really cool is that he has this way about him that keeps that, like, reassures you that he is one of the most grounded, humble, like, well-intended individuals you've ever expected. Like, when we first met him, he didn't do the typical, like, producer thing of trying to impress us by, like, having us go to a fancy dinner or, like, or trying to oversell us or anything like that. Like, he invited us to his home. He cooked dinner for us. I met his daughters, his wife. Like, his daughter, Maddie, is, like, one of the coolest, like little new audio engineers I've ever had in my entire, like, she's so, like, it was just that home vibe, you know, that I got from really hanging out and meeting Eric. And then going into London Bridge Studio, what made it easy to create that album was the environment. That studio just felt instantly like home for us. And there were a lot of, like, special events that, like, that kind of happened around that recording time. Like, for example, Chris Cornell's death happened right when we were starting that album. And Chris Cornell is a really huge, important figure to Eric. And it kind of, when that happened, real talk, we almost delayed recording the album a couple days just because it was a really heavy day. So, like, I remember taking that day off, like, the first half of that day when it happened, because we had just started, like, bringing in equipment and setting up and getting ready to start tracking. And then it happened, and we had this conversation with Eric of just, like, you know, if we need to take time, we can. And he went down to KEXP, checked out the memorial, and then, like, sent me a text and was like, let's just get back to work. And I don't know, like, it was a hard thing to happen, but, like, it felt really eerily like a passing of the torch for us, because we were in the studio that, like, Temple of the Black Dog was recorded, you know?
Yes, yes.
And it was just, like, this real eerie sense of strong responsibility that just flooded over us that allowed us to really take this beautiful gift that was given to us to record the album we exactly wanted, not for granted. That album would not have been what it was if it wasn't for Eric. Like, he's wonderful. Like, I always get afraid when I work with a producer that they're going to, like, this isn't too hit, or this isn't going to catch, or this isn't pop heavy, or, you know, like, trying to restrict us to be, like, what's the word? Marketable, I guess.
Right, right.
And he was the exact opposite. He really sought after what it was that we were trying to say, and really just gave us the proper tools to say it, and he never really interfered with, like, any of the writing process. It was always more of a question whenever we were, like, trying to figure out a new part to him than it was to me, like, that's not going to work, we need to change it. Like, he was just a loving, caring dude that really was, like, seeking after what we were saying. He essentially was the ninth member of the band. Like, it's real talk. Like, it felt awesome. Like he, like, we would go into work every single day, and it was just, it never felt like, oh, I gotta go track this guitar part, and I'm afraid that he's gonna rip it to shreds. He was just always encouraging, and I don't know. It was just a beautiful, wonderful time to have with him, and I'm so grateful.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah, it's almost like a dream come true. You know, like you said, like
it really was, man. Like we knew that we had something special when we were, you know, first writing it. We knew. Not necessarily like, oh, we're going to make it big because it's albums. No, we knew that we had something special because we knew how we felt about it. We knew that, like, our feelings of, like, pride and strength that we had in this album, it felt authentic. But we had no idea that it was going to, like, get on that level so fast. Because we went from playing a self-produced show just being in a multi-million-dollar studio, like, literally a month later.
Yeah.
and it really hasn't slowed down since. So it's like a lot of our process lately has just been playing a lot of catch-up with our emotions.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Golly, that is, that's really something. I want to wrap with this. On the subject of legacy, what do you want your legacy to be, I guess, musically and as a person, you know, 10 or 15 years from now when people are listening to your music still?
Ooh, good question. Legacy for me really comes down to, and this is just my personal perspective, legacy comes down in my eyes to community development. And I always look at the concept of, like, what are we leaving behind? You know, like, what is the reason? What's the purpose? How does this make the world better than when you arrived? And my ultimate goal with all of it is to provide more community spaces for music to actually have an active portion in our society. I know that I would love to use any notoriety or any type of attention and support that comes to this group towards that sense of community development. So in 10 to 15 years from now, I would like to have more community established environments that allow for both educational purposes for, like, youth in particular, and also provides more safe spaces just for performing. And I think if we can start, you know, laying down the groundwork for creating a more all-inclusive, and we're talking about, like, trans-inclusive, people of color-inclusive, because these are certain aspects of our society that are definitely getting left to the wayside and are not, you know, they don't have those safe spaces to really create. And I think we need to really start focusing on those spaces. And I would love to do that with Complex. So I know that there's definitely goals of starting community jams outside of just our band and Look at Us. Because, I mean, true music in our eyes is really about serving. It's mm-hmm. really about serving the people. So our legacy, I think, it's however not clear it might be, I know our legacy is definitely rooted in community development. And really trying to provide, like, we're not trying to be a voice for the people. We would rather provide the platform for those people that have voices to speak for themselves, you know. And I think that's crucial. So that's where I think our legacy is heading. It's, like, really trying to really provide authentic change for our community, both on a local and a global level. Because music does have that sense of power to really bring people together. It's just a matter of how serious does our society take it. And I think if we can constantly push and strive on our personal level to create our music that hopefully has that type of impact, we can use that energy and redirect it towards giving it back to the people. That's what we want more than anything.
Absolutely, absolutely. You hit on so many good points there, and that's what's so beautiful about music is that it has the power to change, you know, to evoke real change, and it breaks down the barriers, you know, mm-hmm. like the differences between you and I or me and the next person, you know, in music there is universalism, and so
exactly.
It's just a wonderful, wonderful gift that we have as a human race. And so,
I 100% agree, and I think it's important that we use that gift to really lift up people whose voices are being stumped out. Lift up women, lift up trans people, lift up people of color, lift up people that are coming from impoverished like areas. Like, we really need to make it more inclusive. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very, very, it sounds really typical, but it's a very male-dominated, most like everything on this planet, world. And we just kind of need to start distributing that balance. And I think that's one area that we're really going to try to go for.
Okay. Good stuff. Good stuff. Well,
yeah.
Ernie, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for stopping by the show today. And I'm all out of questions, but I wanted to open the floor to you if there's anything you'd like to say to our listening audience.
I'm very appreciative. Challenge yourselves, friends. Listen to things that make you uncomfortable. Ask yourself, why do these things make me uncomfortable? And just love each other. That's all I got.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it. I love it, Ernie. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. No problem. Guys, that was Ernie from The Complex Dialect. Their newest LP, it drops December 1st of this year. Make sure to check it out. We'll put a link to their website in the body of this post. If you're listening to us on SoundCloud, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. We're also on your iPhone. If you've got an Apple product or an iPhone of any type, you can listen to us by downloading the Stitcher Smart Radio app. It's available for free in the iTunes store. Download the app, search for our show name, Redefining the Counterculture. You're here this interview with Ernie. We're also available for Android users. If you've got an Android phone or an Android device, you can listen to us by going to the Google Play Store. Search Google Play Music, search for our show name. It's Redefining the Counterculture. You'll hear this interview. And lastly, if you've got a Roku player or a Roku smart television, you can watch and listen to us right in the privacy of your own home. We've got over 200-plus hours of original content, programming, and interviews, all free of charge. From the Roku channel store, just search for a name. Once you search for a name, download the app. You can begin streaming, all free of charge.